This podcast is part of the Self Defense Radio Network.
Hi, this is Derek from Atlanta. Unlike Bob, I am a former law enforcement officer, but I still enjoy listening to a practical show by a practical guy. You're listening to the Handgun World Podcast.
Hi, folks. I'm Bob Main. Welcome to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. This is episode number 403, a dynamic duo. I'll be talking about, well, I'll just leave that as a surprise, okay? A dynamic duo is the main topic of this episode. Welcome to a practical show, folks. I'm not a gunsmith or ex-law enforcement or ex-military or anything like that. I'm just an everyday guy that takes Second Amendment rights very seriously. And I want to start off with a listener email. I got a good one recently, an email, not a voicemail, but I do read all the emails, by the way. I get so many emails regarding this show that I got to tell you, folks, I do read every one. I promise I read every single one. But I can't respond to everyone. Don't have that kind of time. But every once in a while, one comes through that is probably about a subject that I've never covered before. So Dan from Pennsylvania wrote to me, and he says he's got a cousin that lives with, he said, my cousin, non-gun owner, but pro-Second Amendment, lives with me, expressed concern about suppressors if they were to fall into the hands of a determined criminal. And he asks, if a shooting were to occur in a public place, civilians would not as easily be alerted to the sound of gunfire, failing to give the early indication to escape the premise. And basically he's asking is if I think that that would be a problem. And Dan, thanks for writing that email. Here's what I think on that. I don't think it's going to be a problem at all. I sure hope that the Hearing Protection Act passes in Congress. I hope that suppressors become more commonplace. Remember, they're called suppressors, not silencers. Too many people call them silencers. They don't silence the gunfire. They don't silence the sound. They do suppress it. But, you know, try this. Try standing next to somebody firing a handgun or a rifle that's not a .22. That is suppressed, and take your hearing protection off. Okay, don't try this too much. One or two shots, that's it. You still need hearing protection. It's not going to be a very pleasant sound. I still think it's unmistakable that it's gunfire. Now, if somebody is firing a 9mm suppressed with subsonic loads, yeah, okay, that's going to be pretty quiet. Or if it's a 9mm carbine and they're shooting subsonic loads and it's suppressed, yeah, they're very quiet. I still wouldn't recommend that you take off your hearing protection. You're still going to know that that's gunfire. So, you know, would they become more dangerous? No. I mean, would it be more dangerous because the general public might not know that there's gunfire? I just don't see that happening, Dan. I don't think so. I don't see any. First of all, the amount of crimes committed with firearms with suppressors is like, you know, next to nothing. Okay? And all this is so overblown anyway. As you stated in your email, Dan stated in his email, he said, I suppose to an extent he has a point, but data shows that criminal suppressor use is nearly non-existent, statistically speaking. And therein lies the answer right there, Dan. I really believe it. And that is, I just don't see something like that happening. Now, you know, yes, again, it's like a muffler. You know, suppressors are like a muffler. If you think about it, that's you still hear the car driving and you still hear the engine starting, but the exhaust is muffled. We all know what happens if you have a problem, if you got a hole in the muffler of your car, if you take the muffler off, if you got an exhaust problem. You know, just try taking the muffler off of your car and then driving it, and then you'll see what it sounds like. But you still know when the engine starts and when the car is driving down the road, you still hear it. You still know. You still hear it coming and things like that, even though it's got a muffler. That's all that guns are with suppressors, are guns with a muffler. So keep that in mind when you're thinking about suppressors, and let's not call them silencers. I don't know why they're called that. Okay, next, I got an email from Drew in New York. Drew's a New York State Trooper. And Drew says, I'm an avid listener of your show. Keep up the good work. Thank you, Drew. I appreciate that. He says, I am going to move to an M&P shield for my everyday carry. Good choice. I was wondering if you could offer up your opinion or a review of a good outside-the-waistband and inside-the-waistband holster option for the M&P shield. Well, Drew, as you know, Concealment Solutions is a sponsor. And I'm not going to recommend their holsters just because they're a sponsor. They became a sponsor because I started using their products, and I did for a couple of years, and believe in them so much that I decided, I approached them and said, hey, why don't we work out a sponsorship agreement? But only because I have great luck using them. I have a Concealment Solutions outside the waistband Cobra holster, Drew. An outside the waistband Cobra, all Kydex. And I've got one for almost every gun I own, including the Smith & Wesson M&P Shield. It is a great setup. I really like carrying outside the waistband because it's such a fast draw. And it's so comfy, and especially with a gun as small as an M&P Shield, check it out. Go to ConcealmentSolutions.com and check out the Cobra and put in Handgun World for the coupon code, and you'll get 10% off of your order. As far as an inside the waistband, for the Shield, specifically for the Smith & Wesson Shield, for an inside the waistband, and Drew, I don't know exactly how you like to carry, whether you like to carry strong side hip or appendix carry. I'm assuming if you're a New York State Trooper, you probably like carrying behind the hip because that's probably how you carry on duty. You might want to consider, though, if you do carry inside the waist and you want to try carrying that gun appendix, the Dale Fricke appendix holsters for the Shield are real good. The Spencer Keepers holsters, Keepers Concealment holsters for, inside the waistband are real good. The Concealment Solutions for behind the hip, the Black Mamba CEs, that's a good holster also for the Smith & Wesson Shield. That gun is so small and so thin and light and easy to hide. Pick one out there, Drew. Pick one. I gave you some personal recommendations, but pick a holster out there. I think you're going to be happy with just about anything that you get for that gun because it's such a wonderful single-stack 9mm pistol and easy to conceal. Good choice. Drew, thank you very much for the email, and thank you very much for listening to my show. All right, let's see. Let's go ahead and get on with the main topic. I talk so much about training. And most people take a training class, there's one instructor. The one instructor might have assistants, but usually there's one instructor that does all of the primary teaching. You ever thought about taking a class with two instructors? There's some big benefits of that. And they're hard to find. Hard to find classes where there are two instructors teaching. Well, recently on the Polite Society podcast, Paul Lathrop and the staff at the Polite Society podcast, they interviewed me and Ben Branham, and they asked us to come on the show and talk about our training, but more specifically, the advantages of having two instructors, because if you take a class with me and with Ben Branham, you get two instructors, and there's some good benefits of that. So, with the permission from Paul Lathrop at the Polite Society podcast, if you haven't had a chance to listen to it already, you're going to listen to it now. The benefit of having two instructors, my appearance and Ben Branham's appearance on the Polite Society podcast, coming right up shortly.
Joining us for our interview segment today, Bob Main and Ben Branham. They are the pair that does Beyond Concealed Carry training. And the reason I wanted to bring you guys on, I'm going to start with you, Bob, if I could. I've taken training from you and Ben, but most of my training I've taken has been one instructor per class. There may be some assistants there. There may be range safety officers, but there's only been one instructor, one person giving their philosophy, so to speak. You guys do something entirely differently. And you both teach, you both have strengths you work with. And I'm wondering how it came about that you two decided to come together, and how difficult was it to bring two philosophies together to train as one?
Hey, well, Paul, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. Actually, you know, most of the students have found it to be quite a benefit having both of us, because Ben and I don't always agree on everything. And, you know, I'll teach it one way and he'll teach it another. And then the student gets to make up their mind which one's going to work for, you know, best for them. You don't get that when it's one single instructor normally. So that's actually a real benefit. And how it came about was Ben and I met at an IDPA match one day. And, you know, we just kind of started talking a little bit about doing some training. And Ben said, hey, why don't we try doing a class? So we scheduled one and we just went out there and did it. That's literally how it happened. Right, Ben?
Yeah. And Bob is like ready, shoot, aim. And he just went, hey, how about a class? And I was like, hey, that's a good idea. We should think about that. He calls me up and he's like, hey, this Saturday, June 1st, you're free, right? And I was like, oh, sure. Okay, I got the range. We're teaching a class. So that's how the first class came about. And then
it is what I did.
We've just kind of grown it, and it's worked really well, because I bring a good military and actual fighting background, and Bob brings more of a civilian case background. So we can play off each other. We from different backgrounds, different parts of the country, so we can explain things differently, and a lot of different training classes as we came into this in our training stuff. So I think it's really cool that the student gets to hear it two different ways from two different instructors, and they might click on one way and not the other. And half the time we're explaining the same exact thing, and him and I have to go through our curriculum and say, okay, Bob, you're going to teach this and I'll shut up, and I'm going to teach this and you shut up, because we both we're used to talking on the podcast, we're used to teaching, so we're all always like there, and it's kind of cool. So we get to help and extra questions, and you know, we just kind of fell into it. It was an accident the first time. And then we said, hey, that worked out great. Let's do it again. And then let's do it again. And the next thing we know, we have a business doing it. And it's a lot of fun. It's something we can help students out probably better than any other set of instructors out there, just because we can both do all of the curriculum ourselves. But then when we split it up, if a student's having a problem, Bob's teaching a part of it, and I can take that student aside, and I have the same background and everything, and so we can teach the same thing in a different way, and I can catch a student up. So it's teaching together has been the biggest blessing of my life. I love it so much, and I think the students are just getting a huge deal from the two of us.
Yeah, and I want to add something to that. Ben just kind of hit on something real important that most students find is a good thing. Oftentimes, while one of us is on the line teaching a technique, the other one is behind the line explaining some things to the students, talking to the students a little bit about it, and, you know, kind of coaching them a little bit. So when it's their time to get up on the line and start, they've kind of already got a pretty good idea of what it is that we're trying to, you know, get across. And it's kind of a tag team that works pretty well. Also, when we get into some large class sizes occasionally, then it's really nice, because if you have one single instructor and you've got a large class size, it's hard to get personal attention. But with Ben and I both there teaching, the students get a lot more personal attention that way.
Very cool. One other thing I wanted to cover, and I'm going to open it up to everybody else here in just a second, but the last week we had a discussion on the show, and the word tactical was discussed. And I brought up that when I think tactical, I think of a very overweight short guy in camo that has a drop leg holster. And you guys, but you guys, I would say, are the good side of tactical. You bring the thinking to what you're doing with firearms. If you're and the outside of the, you know, somebody that takes one of your classes. I know you do some basic classes, but the classes you do when you travel are for the people that already know where the bullets come out of the gun at, that already can present and fire a reasonable group, that kind of know what they're doing with the firearm. You don't want to be a very, very basic person and go to a Beyond Concealed Carry enhanced class.
So, that's true.
I guess where I was going with this is when you obviously have had people that have come into your class that aren't up to speed as far as they should be to start the class. What do you do when somebody comes into your class? They paid the money, but they don't know up from down, and they may be a little bit dangerous with their firearm. Has that come up, and what have you done to deal with it?
Yeah, it's happened, and it's happened more than once, and that's the advantage of having two instructors right there, because when one person is struggling or maybe slightly unsafe, I can pull them out of the class a little bit. I can pull them to the side of the range and work with them, or Ben can do the same thing. And sometimes Ben will say, "Hey, Bob, you know, why don't you run this next drill? I got to talk to somebody and kind of show them a few things." And that's kind of his polite way of saying, "We got somebody here that's kind of unsafe. I need to handle this."
And it's not always that when we start saying that, you think that this guy is just a knucklehead running around with a gun, going to shoot himself in the foot. That tactical mall ninja that I think you were trying to talk about, Paul. Mm-hmm. It's not always that. It's that some of the students are self-taught and they haven't used a camera, so they're not really sure what they're doing. They think they know what they're doing is right, and they've practiced it 30 or 40 times or 3,000 times. And I'm like, hold on. Let's go back a little bit and relearn that draw, and let's get that finger out of the trigger. And it just – so then we can pull – somebody's side and redo it. And the other thing we can do is I can always stand next to a person that's marginally kind of look like they're going to do something. I'm not sure what that person did. Bob, run that drill again. Let me stand right next to him. And so we can get the safety stuff going. And Tactical Mall Ninjas, if you come to the class, it's the only person I'm going to really relentlessly make fun of people. It just doesn't fit in with our personalities. Bob shows up in shorts and a t-shirt half the time and tennis shoes. It's how he dresses most of the time. Yes, I dress like I do at the gun shop all the time now. I'm wearing 5'11s most of the time. But it's how we both dress out in the real world. If you catch us at lunch, that's what we'll be wearing. We'll be wearing the same guns we're using in the class. So we try to get the students to do what they do every day, not come out with chest rig, body armor, helmet, drop leg holsters. No, we're looking.
Oh, you guys don't live in Chicago. You don't know how we have to dress every day.
Okay, if I lived in Chicago, maybe I would. But, I mean, I haven't dressed like that since 08 and 09 when I was overseas. You know, in Iraq, that's how we all dress. But here in the United States, it's kind of nobody dresses like that. Even cops get made fun of. I mean, I will point and laugh at the cop that's wearing a drop leg holster for no reason. So if you come like that to my class, I will point and laugh at you.
You have to go back to carrying your 50 back in your armored car days, right?
Yeah, catch up with me. I'll put the Desert Eagle on and let's play.
You know, I have not had a similar experience with students. The majority of mine have been concealed carry people, and I've had people of all levels of experience from never touched a gun to 20 years. But when I used to teach motorcycles, I used to run into students. I actually had one who didn't have a license, and the class I was teaching actually enabled you to get the motorcycle license in Illinois. And the guy is the only one who's ever failed the class, rode his bike to class every day. Have you guys run into that? Not necessarily the tech-to-cool kind of guys, but the ones that have been doing it forever and their habits are so ingrained, it's virtually impossible to break, but they're bad.
Well, we've had people that have shown up to class with bad habits, yes. But Ben and I, usually by even halfway through the first day, we're able to kind of show them some different things that make them rethink what they're doing.
Oh, that's great. That's yeah. So important.
I can only think of two students that I laughed at, and they were one student wanted to continuously do the Charlie's Angel pose when he drew his weapon. And I'm like, you got to stop doing that. It's not cool. Yeah. And I finally took a video on it and showed it to him. And he goes, wow, that really isn't cool.
So was he doing it. The Farrah or the Kate? Which one was it?
I think he was doing the Farrah, I think. I think he was. And then
the other student was a really young guy, super sharp, hadn't taken a class before. He was in his teens when he took our class the first time, and he kept trying to draw with his elbows high like Chris Costa draws with his pistol and like snap it in like you're a butterfly flying. And I'm like, okay, dude, stop watching that video. Chris Costa, give him credit. He is great with a rifle. He teaches really well. I've seen a bunch of his videos, but he kind of goes off the reservation when he tries to redo the pistol draw there. And I was like, no. Let's go back the truck up. And it took me 5 or 10 minutes with that student to get him away from that kind of weird draw. I was like, nobody does that, man.
Yeah, I remember.
And there's a
that
reason.
Student.
He was a great guy, too. Though. I won't mention names, yes. But I still remember him, and I still talk to his family. It was salt of the earth piece people, and by the end of the day, that kid was out shooting all of us.
Yeah, that's true. He was. He did a good job.
He listened really well. So that's the only students that stick out of my mind, and it's been like 4 years of doing this that everybody really – they show up to learn. It's great, and I love teaching civilians now. When I was with the military, they showed up because they had to, and half of them didn't want to be there. And so right. Getting to do anything, I wanted to pull out a pugil stick and start whipping them or something. But the students that show up, they pay their money, they're spending their time, they are there to learn. And it is, as an instructor, it is the awesomest thing to watch, like that kid, we'd all call him a kid now, just start whooping all our butts and outshoot us all. It was a lot of fun.
Isn't it cool that we now have video cameras in our pockets and we can record them? And to show them right there on the spot what they're doing and how it looks. And it helps to be able to correct those kind of errors.
Oh, it's
most of the time, that's a good thing. Most of the time. Sometimes that can be misused, too. But, yes, it is. It's kind of nice to have.
You mean the time where you take the cell phone and go, hey, everybody, look what this knucklehead. No. That's not the approved teaching technique.
No,
and for you guys that are instructors out there, you don't use the phone all the time. You only use your camera every once in a while to make an extreme point. I see people out there want to film everything at a shooting competition or something. I'm like, put the phone away and shoot.
Yeah, and if any prospective students listening to this and they're a little worried, we do not push the button that says upload to YouTube.
Anything that we use, we get express permission for. So if you guys are out there on our courses and you don't want video taken of you, I won't take video of you or even pictures. But no, most people don't care. There's no more. I mean, we haven't had very many secret squirrels come through the class. There was a couple when we were out in Washington that we couldn't take
pictures
of.
Yeah, there was out at Fort Discovery.
But that was fun.
And when you guys came up to Sioux Falls a couple of years ago, or a year and a half ago now, I do this with all courses that I host. Right at the beginning, first day, right in the morning, I ask, is there anybody here that does not want their picture taken? Because there are, one example I will, of course, not name, but there was a young lady who had a problem with a stalker. And she didn't want her picture taken. And obviously, I'm going to go to extreme lengths to honor those wishes.
It's part of your responsibility as an instructor, not just to protect them from with safety, but if their identity or whatever. I mean, we've had undercover police officers and things like that in class. Yeah, you absolutely have to protect them.
Yeah, and just basic human respect. So
absolutely.
We try to do that around here.
Speaking of which, you guys talked about the minimums required for your course. I've taken it. I deeply appreciated it, and I wasn't a perfect student. You guys corrected my mistakes and left my character alone, made me a better shooter. Thank you. It's great you do, but that is the rule. And I think a lot of the fear that students have, well, at least fortunately, isn't founded in the instruction I've seen.
Well, thanks for that.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. We're not going to be yelling at people. A lot of times you go to classes, and I've been to a class once where the instructor spent a significant amount of time yelling at people that didn't get it. And we don't do that. I mean, when you start to yell at somebody that's already having trouble, you're just going to make the whole situation worse. And you won't get that from us.
And you're yelling at somebody that has a loaded gun in their hand.
Yeah, exactly.
Not the smartest, but no.
Well, if they're having a hard time processing it, what you tell them, adding volume seldom helps.
Or adding, you know, swear words and things like that, you know, and the volume. Yeah, it doesn't normally help. And I've seen people that couldn't get a technique, and you know, their hands are shaking. And like Ben says, they got a loaded gun, their hands are shaking. They're already upset because they didn't perform well. It's their hands weren't shaking because we said anything. It's just because they couldn't get it down. So we'll calm them down. Ben's actually real good at that. It's just getting the student calm and getting them squared away, and then they get right back in and enjoy the rest of the class.
Well, if we could, guys, I got to run to break here quick, but I would like you to hang on for one more segment, if you would, because I want to talk about moving and shooting when we come back. So can I have you hang on for one more segment?
Yes, sir.
Absolutely. Sure.
All right. Hang on, everybody. We'll be back with our second segment with Bob and Ben right after this.
In 1928, Germany required its citizens to register their firearms, making possible Hitler's 1938 Nazi Weapons Act, disarming all Jews. Now ask yourself, what is the real consequence of registration? All in favor of gun control, raise your right hand. Brought to you by Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, America's aggressive civil rights organization. JPFO.org.
And we're back for the second segment of Ben Branham and Bob Main. They are together, Beyond Concealed Carry Training. And guys, I wanted to, as I alluded to before we went to break, I want to talk a little bit about moving and shooting. Most training classes I've been to, you stand and shoot. You may stand at different distances. You may do a few different things. But when I took your course, it wasn't even midway through day one, and we were moving while shooting. And I want to get to that a little bit. And I guess I'll go to you, Ben, because I went to Bob first last time. But, Ben, how important is it for somebody to get training in moving and shooting?
I think it's one of the most important things. And if you break down most instructors' lessons plans, you'll get – number one course is their intro. Their number two course is just stand there and deliver. And then it'll be their number three or number four course that you're actually moving on. And so all of us agree that shooting and moving is critical to what you would do to win a gunfight. It is possible to win without moving, but you know what? I've been in 11 gunfights, and when people were shooting at me, boy, did I want to move. Your skin's crawling and you just want to run. And so if I can teach you to use that normal innate human thing that you want to move to actually do it and then make hits, I think we can really win the gunfight. And I don't think there's an instructor out there that would argue with me on that. We just have the argument of at what point should you move, how fast you should move, and whether it's more important to make a hit and then move or to move and then shoot. It gets down to the weeds of where we want to argue. And it seems for most listeners, that probably seems kind of a dumb argument. And I think so too. We're all in agreement. Move, do something, mess with the other guys at OODA Loop, get offline, get your gun out and make some hits. So we just kind of have a lot of instructors will tell you, take a step left or right and then draw your weapon and shoot. Other instructors will tell you, fire two rounds, take two steps, fire two rounds. Me and Bob, it's just move, get out of the line of fire, make them react to you because you, as a good guy, are generally so far behind the eight ball because they have surprised you. Your awareness sucks because somebody jumped out in front of you with a gun or a knife or whatever. You screwed up pretty bad and somebody closed that distance with you and has a weapon. Now you need to take back the initiative. The easiest way to do it is to move. There's all these other things that we can talk about, like dropping your wallet or throwing something at them or yelling at them or all this other stuff. But I know move makes them think like, hey, what are you doing? And you just need that half second to second of, hey, what is this person doing? So you can get your gun out and get into the fight. So I think moving and shooting is just the most critical thing you can do. And just instructors throw it to that, you know, number four or five class. And it's not because they want to make money. It's because they want you to have the fundamentals down. They want you to be able to do it safely. They want you to be able to do it effectively. And it just – it takes a long time. So Bob and I came up with the idea of, you know what? Let's do the most critical things we can think of in our one-day class. And that typical gunfight we all think about, 3 yards, 3 seconds, three shots, man, that is way too close to have somebody be shooting at you while you're standing there, you know, toe-to-toe. I tell students, forget that, you know, forget taking the other guy with you. You want to win. You want to go home with to your family. So moving is one of the best things you can do, even if it's backpedaling to create distance. Anything is better than standing there flat-footed and trying to draw your weapon.
That when I took your class, sorry Bob, but it was a 2-day class when you came up to Sioux Falls, and you're going to be doing that both with the Sioux Falls and with the Illinois class coming up next year is a 2-day class, I believe. But by the end of the class, you had us in full retreat and still returning fire.
Yeah, we did, and. In fact, Paul, all of our classes in 2017, with the exception of January in San Antonio, they're all 2-day classes next year. I just wanted to throw that out there. Mm-hmm. But I want to add something. I want to add something to what Ben said. I remember the first time I tried to shoot a moving target with a handgun. It was not a pretty sight. If you ever try to shoot a moving target, a relatively quickly moving target, with a handgun, it's hard to do. So we're believers in making yourself a hard target to hit. And I think one of the best ways to do that is to move, assuming you have the space. We also teach you what to do if you don't have the space to move, but that's a whole different subject. But I think that's one of the big benefits you get of learning how to move and shoot. And then, as you just mentioned, Paul, also return fire while you're moving.
And I think Bob gets a lot of credit for this. He kind of figured out how to break it down Barney style, like Barney the dinosaur. That's what we use in the Marine Corps as a big joke.
Yeah.
Just super simple, step by step, little thing at a time, how to hold the pistol, how to do it. And then I just teach it. And it's kind of, if you trust me and I tell you what to do and you do it, you'll be making hits, you'll be moving. And I even do it in my ads now. I say you'll be running and gunning faster than you ever thought you could. And I think, Paul, you were moving pretty fast, faster than you thought you could, and make hits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's the part of the class where I come out with my purple dinosaur suit, and we explain it Barney style. And no, but anyway, well, like Ben said, I'll show you not only how to hold the pistol, but also your footwork. The footwork's incredibly important when you're trying to move. And I've seen a lot of people, especially in competition matches, almost stumble over themselves while they're trying to move and shoot simply because they don't use the right footwork.
And Paul has a great YouTube video up on that from like 2 years ago where it shows us all line dancing and learning footwork.
Yeah. That was unintentional. That just happened that way.
That was a lot of fun, by the way, Paul. That was hilarious. It's 2 years later. I'm still laughing about it. But that's the kind of fun we like to have at the course, too. It's very, very serious what we do, but you got to joke. You got to have a good time. If you're just serious, dead serious the whole time, that would be a long, boring, no fun 2 days.
So right. Nobody could maintain that level of intensity for 2 full days of training.
No, even more, no. Who wants to?
Right.
As an instructor, I don't want to. I want to have a good time. And we get into some very, very deep discussions during lunch and stuff that I feel remiss if Paul and I, or Bob and I, don't mention to the students, like mindset and legal aspects and stuff. But that's the stuff you almost feel dirty after teaching. Getting out there running up and down the range and shooting, I mean, that's the fun stuff because we can all have the competition and do better. Let's see, can I run faster than him? Can I shoot faster than him? Can I make more hits? And it just becomes this fun day of doing it better.
I would like to, if anybody's going to be hosting Bob and Ben, or if you happen to on day 2 be asked to hold the gun and do not let Ben take it away from you, well, the skin on my hand is pretty much back, but I'll tell you, just let him have the damn gun.
Hey, I want to. That wasn't my fault. You dared me to. I just couldn't not do it. You're like, yeah, you can't. that was hilarious because the only gun we had that we could make safe, because Bob and I were flying, we didn't bring any blue guns, and nobody had a blue gun, was that F&S. Mm-hmm. That thing is sharp as all get out, and we had a yellow barrel that we could drop in to make sure that thing was super safe so we could actually do a gun takeaway. And yeah, that thing was sharp.
Yeah, it had very, very stippled grips, and it was easy to hang on to. And I gave it about 90%, and I really should have not given 90%.
Well, and Bob and I get into those gun takeaways and stuff in our advanced courses, and it's just, for everybody that doesn't know what I'm talking about, it is super easy to take a gun from somebody. You think you have a really good hold on it, but really you don't have any leverage on that gun. Once somebody that knows what they're doing grabs a hold of that gun, you think you have it by the grip, and you've got nothing. If somebody's got it by the barrel, they've got everything, and it's all leverage, and you're just going to lose. And Paul and I did it real politely, just real nice, and I just twisted the gun out of his hand, and he's like, wait a second, somebody told me you couldn't do that. I was like, well, I don't know who told you, but there it is.
All right. Anybody else have anything else they want to bring up with Bob and Ben? All right, well, we have alluded. Go ahead.
Can you edit?
Yes.
Bob and Ben, I remember you talking about what was considered advanced and what was just the basics to higher and higher standards. And I was discussing defensive gun use, and I'd like to hear you guys talk about that here. Tell us where your students would pick up these building blocks. This individual went to an ATM. Two teenagers approached him. They were both armed. The victim was carrying concealed. So you have delivering from a holster, a concealed holster, so not it's under your clothes. You have to clear a cover garment. You've got two on one. I'm thinking you probably have motion, and you've got delivery at night. Probably close quarters firing too. None of that's covered when you take yourself to the shooting range once a week and think you've practiced. So where do they come up to speed?
What do you mean where do they come up to speed? You mean is that
where would they learn the skills to defend themselves under that situation? That's not an exotic situation. That's pretty common. Oh.
A lot of what you just described, Rob, we teach typically in the second day of Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced. And then we also teach that in the advanced class, too. But a lot of what you're talking about, we'll get into in the second day, especially multiple adversaries. Mm-hmm. We teach that. That's an important one. You know, we don't normally teach shooting at night unless you come to one of our night classes. But that's important. So there's a pitch for our night classes whenever we hold them, because that's important. Ben, what do you think on that?
You know, you get lucky in the basics work where you stand there and deliver and just hit two targets. A lot of instructors will say, well, that's an advanced skill to stand there and hit two different targets. And I'm kind of thinking, well, the advanced skill is not the shooting part. It's the tactics to move offline, to get those two guys online so you attack one at a time so that you can win. And we teach that in the second day of our BCC Enhanced. For a long time, that was part of our advanced course, was teaching multiple adversaries. Then we started looking at gunfights in the real world more and more, and it's like 50% of the time, they're bringing a buddy. So we're we need to put that into the first day course or the two-day course so that people know that, because I don't want them to stand there flat-footed. Having a plan and being able to execute your plan puts you way ahead of that power curve. If you're standing there and going, huh, there's two of them, what do I do? And you're trying to come up with a plan, those guys already got a plan. You're already behind, and you're falling farther and farther behind. If you go, oh, okay, I know what to do. Bob and Ben taught me, jink left, get them online, get my gun out, and attack one at a time. Yeah, two on one, there's advantages and disadvantages to everything. If there's one of you and two of them, you can outmaneuver them. The smaller units always move faster. But you got to get to some advanced courses to learn some of that stuff so that you get into the actual tactics side of winning the fight more than just the shooting. because you can watch guys that'll go from YouTube videos and they can do speed rocks out of the holster in like less than a second and smoke two targets. And you're like, wow, that's incredibly fast. I don't want to sit there and play fast draw with two guys that have a gun on me already, though. Anytime we actually do a demonstration on day two about that, and students are, they always laugh at the demonstration, like, really? Well, this is how most courses teach it. Stand there and draw against two guys that already got a gun out. Go. See how that works for you. And it never works well. So
no, it doesn't. And let me add to that. Rob, you said a concealed carry draw, which is probably 95% of the time in a defensive gun use, what's going to take place is a concealed carry draw. We definitely cover that. Matter of fact, that's how we start our classes, is getting you to perfect your concealed carry draw. So, that's you'll get that. You'll get that at Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced for sure.
We are coming up on the end of the segment again, guys. But before we go, and I mention this every show, but let's go ahead and mention it again. There's a way that our listeners can get a discount on your classes, every class coming up in 2017. And that's if you go to selfdefenseradio.net, click on the listener discount page. And again, don't tell anybody, but we're going to give you the password here. It's SDRN, all lowercase. And you get in there and you can get discounts on your classes coming up. Where are you going next year?
January, San Antonio. That's one-day class. February in Houston. April in Dallas. May in Utah. We're going to be Jason Christensen from Concealment Solutions is our host out there. June in Illinois, Wisconsin. Gary's our host there. And August, Sioux Falls and Ohio with Paul Carlson.
And then we're working on the Northeast, trying to get up there too next year. So we are busy bees.
Yes. Very cool. And having been a graduate of your course and having you guys come back to host, I can say I wholeheartedly endorse your course. I think it is, even if you've taken, for an example, a Mag 40 course, you need to take a course like this. You got the legal covered with the Mag 40, but let's get the practical in there too, and that's what you guys cover so well.
Well, thanks for that endorsement, Paul. And
thank you, Paul. I appreciate it.
We had such a great time up there with you last time. I can't wait to go to Illinois and go back to see you again. And oh man, we are excited about this next year and traveling.
Okay, many thanks to Paul Lathrop at the Polite Society Podcast for bringing me and Ben Branham on the show to talk about our training. We are the Dynamic Duo, and come train with us. Check out handgunworld.com. I've got all of our classes for 2017 listed there. We might be coming to an area near you real soon. If you like to support my show, if this show helps you, if this podcast helps you in making decisions and things, there's several ways you can support me, and I'm going to put out a call right now to all of you who buy things on Amazon. If you don't mind using my Amazon store, that really helps out. Lots of you do it. I appreciate that. You don't have to spend any extra money. Just click the Amazon store at handgunworld.com first. Follow that link that's on the Amazon store page and then make your purchases and Amazon will pay me. A lot of people lately, a lot of new members have been signing up for our Shooters Club video membership program. Watching videos is a great way to reinforce what you already know, or reinforce what you just learned in training class. Videos don't take the place of training by any means, but they definitely are a great reinforcement. And for only $8 a month or $75 a year, you can become a member of our video and audio exclusive membership. None of this information do we cover on either of our podcasts or YouTube channels. So check that out. There's a Shooters Club page at handgunworld.com. How about a voicemail? For those of you that have a comment or something you want to add to the show, call into my voicemail, 210-646-1727. That's 210-646-1727. And I haven't had any iTunes reviews lately. If you use iTunes or Stitcher Radio, both of those programs, I think Google Play does too, They give you the ability to review this show. I'd love it if you would do that. Just write a quick review or rating at iTunes or Stitcher Radio or Google Play, however you listen to this podcast. Folks, thanks again. I'm Bob Main. You've just listened to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. And remember, evil does not exist in the holster. It exists in the hearts of men and women. Shoot straight, and I'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.